When it comes to influencer marketing for B2B in general, there's two school of thoughts. Number one, it's to target higher expertise people that can really relay your message. And then it's the exact same mechanics, whether or not you're in B2B or in B2C, right? Meaning it's the power of recommendation at the end of the day, right? It's if I tell the world that you are awesome, Jonathan, I'm going to carry a lot more weight than if you yourself say that you're awesome, Jonathan, right? The power of a third party here.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. This is Jonathan Gandolf, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus, where I'm thrilled to be joined by another co-founder and co-CEO of Upfluence, Vivian Garnez, today. We're going to be talking about all things influencer marketing, maybe interestingly enough, how they market their own software. And of course, anytime I have a co-founder, CEO, entrepreneur on the podcast, I'm always excited to learn about their journey, learn a little bit from them. And I trust it'll make for a great conversation for our listeners and watchers today. So Vivian, before I ramble too much or get too excited about that conversation, tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to at Upfluence in your own words.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. First, thanks for having me. Pleasure being here on the pod. And so my name is Vivian. I, like you probably can hear, I'm not American. I am French because nobody's perfect. So apologies in advance for the accent. My background is in business. I went to business school. I also have a doctorate degree in influencer marketing. I was probably one of the very first in the world to have that degree. So I have both a professional and academic background. And for the last 12 years, I've been growing Upfluence.
That's awesome. I'm excited to dig into a doctorate degree in influencer marketing. I also studied business in university here stateside. And it's B2B marketing isn't like a discipline that's taught really. You know, it's very broad marketing, or very often comes at it from a B2C kind of influence or lens. And influencer marketing is even a step beyond that, where it's like really in depth and tactical and specific. So might ask you about that here in a little bit. But first, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. So we always enjoy asking all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
So originally, I'm more of an IPA guy, but being French, you know, wine was always the uncool thing that my parents were drinking. And it's growing into me now, so I'm more and more into wine. And occasionally, I would drink whiskey or a gin tonic. There you have it.
I like it. I did not expect IPA from the French countryside here, you know, the big city in France. So I appreciate that. I've got a little bit of background myself in the beer industry, so I'm familiar with that. And not as much as a wine connoisseur as I'd like to be. So I'm always trying to learn as much as I can there.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, let's jump into the conversation. Upfluence helps brands with influencer marketing, kind of an emerging space, if you will. I think it's very real now and very solidified. It is something a lot of brands are investing in. I'm curious though, from the Upfluence perspective, you guys are helping a lot of consumer brands, but you are marketing, you're kind of B2B to C, right?
That's right.
Are you drinking your own champagne and how you're doing your own influencer marketing, or how are you seeing influencer marketing kind of play out in the B2B space?
So first off, you're spot on. We do B2B2C in the sense that we sell to companies that sell to consumers, right? So absolutely right here. When it comes to influencer marketing for B2B in general, there's two school of thoughts. Number one, it's to target higher expertise people that can really relay your message. And then it's the exact same mechanics, whether or not you're in B2B or in B2C. Right? Meaning it's the power of recommendation at the end of the day, right? It's if I tell the world that you are awesome, Jonathan, I'm going to carry a lot more weight than if you yourself say that you're awesome, Jonathan, right? The power of a third party here. And so this is what we do at scale, using the power of social media. And so the difference between B2B and B2C will be on the social network. So obviously it's going to be a lot more LinkedIn or X, formerly Twitter, as opposed to the B2C world, which is very heavy into TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. But there's some overlap. You know, YouTube is a good example of kind of longer form content that really can benefit both. And the way we have done this, and a lot of folks have done it in the space, is to, as possible, get the opinion of experts to say good things about who you are, and then leverage that content for basically everything, right? Repurpose that content for some own media that you can have on your website, also for paid media that you can, you know, really to use to amplify the reach of that publication. And I think that really that overlap between media, paid, and content is a great recipe, and that a very powerful one, even in B2B.
Yeah, I can share a little bit of our own experience at The Juice, which is now Audience Plus. When we started, you know, we were interested in acquiring users to use our platform. We had to. We weren't interested in it. It was critical to our business. And we spent a little bit on traditional advertising, digital advertising channels, and we just couldn't spend enough to move the needle in a way that was exciting to everybody. And we kind of like, you know, we're looking for other opportunities. And sure enough, we thought like influencers, right? And this was 2021 when we first started. And we partnered with influencers in the B2B space who had a big LinkedIn following or maybe a big newsletter. And that very quickly like became our biggest growth channel, was through those people who, like you said, were kind of building trust through their trust. It's not us talking about how great we are, but it was influencers or B2B content creators that actually did use our platform, enjoyed our platform. And there were ones that we partnered with that, you know, you could tell how engaged their audience was, because just the smallest little recommendation really like did move the needle for us. But on the alternative side, we also had some swings and misses with it, right? And I think that's part of the lesson that I've shared with others in the B2B space as they think about influencer marketing, is it feels like there's almost a little bit more volatility to it. And you just got to, you have to bake that into the broader picture that you're painting, right? So maybe for our listeners, watchers on this episode, what advice do you have for somebody who's just getting started in the influencer marketing path?
Such a great point. And we've certainly noticed that at scale as well. And so here I would say the number one tip would be to favor fit over fame, meaning it's very important that the editorial line between the creator and the brand is very aligned, that the audience is very much a close fit as well. And it matters more than any sort of vanity metric you can look at, right? And so that fit over fame, I would say, would be priority number one. Lots of tools on the market, selfish plug here, influence being one of them, but gives you a ton of data on a number of areas. Number one, what's the audience data composed of? What kind of gender? What kind of age? What kind of geography, right? Because sometimes you're going to look at someone's numbers saying, oh, this looks great, but your catchment area is very different from where their audience is, right? So in that case, you sort of spend marketing dollars that are not going to serve your audience at all, right? So those are the little tweaks you can do. Number one. Number two, how frequently does that person partner with brands, or in that case with businesses, and how competitive are they to you, right? Because someone that really uses and abuses, you know, these kind of paid collaborations, I think that hurts the trust that you were mentioning of their audience. And so that can really hurt the performance as well. That's something we've seen. And how competitive are they to you? If someone tells great thing about company A and immediately after about company B, and companies A and B are direct competitors, that really dilutes, I think, the genuine and the authenticity of a message here. And for that, we have metrics. You know, we calculate the saturation rate, meaning how often does a person engage with brands, or the efficiency rate, meaning as opposed to an organic baseline, how well do that collab, how well does that perform? Does it underperform, overperform? And those are a ton of data points that are very prevalent in the B2C world, you know, where influence operates. I believe not as prevalent in the B2B world, and that's probably one of the factors why there's a little bit more of a risk factor on B2B and a little bit more making shots in the dark, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I love fit over fame. I think that's really important and worth repeating. Okay, we've partnered with this influencer, mm-hmm. and we want to make sure that our message that we're paying them to get out gets out, but we want to make sure it's genuine and their voice. How do you kind of toe that line between this is an ad yep. that we're paying for, or a partnership that we're paying for, and we need to make sure we do get the performance out of it, but also they've got this unique voice that resonates with their audience? I have to imagine sometimes it's difficult for brands to let go of the reins and really let the influencer use their voice and language, but that's what has allowed them to become an influencer, right?
You're spot on. You're absolutely spot on. I think you asking that question makes you more advanced. That's probably 80% of people who do influencer marketing, interestingly. The way I like to look at it, it's a spectrum, right? And at the end of the day, you're going to have to make a trade-off. At the end of the spectrum, there is absolute editorial control. And you see a lot of it from luxury brands saying, you know, this is an ad. I want there to the comma to be my message, my marketing message. You know, I don't care how you would phrase it, how you would spin it. It has to be my message. And yes, you have absolute control. And in terms of brand safety, it's probably better. However, you completely turning your back to the fact that that creator has created an audience sometimes for many years, and they know what works. Obviously, there's that feedback loop that makes that for many years, they have proposed content that actually has performed specifically for them. And so you're turning your back to that. So you can expect, yes, to have absolute messaging control. However, how great is going to be your performance? Probably not that good. So when you buy an ad, you buy technically two things. You buy a piece of media, but you also buy some performance, right? And some reach and number of metrics. And so where do you place the cursor between these two extremes? On the other hand, there's the complete laissez-faire approach, which is I'm sending you a product or I'm sending you a brief. You do whatever you want. I don't need to review the content. You know, you do you and publish. And, you know, that's the exact opposite of it. It's going to be great editorial freedom. There's chances that this is going to work very well, but probably the person is going to talk about your brand in a way that you're not necessarily familiar with or used to or sometimes comfortable with. But I think this is where the magic happens. So my personal take is I'm more on the second end of the spectrum than the first one.
Yeah, I love that. It's kind of like there's almost like a mystery or intrigue to that. And, you know, I think if the marketer can get over the fear that comes with that or the anxiety that comes with that, like that is where the magic happens. Like you mentioned, that's like, there's almost this like excitement of like, let's see what a fresh set of eyes and kind of a fresh perspective can do with our brand or our product or our offer. Yeah.
Let him cook, that right?
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so then you talked about the performance side of things mm-hmm. here as well. Genuinely, feel free to talk about how Upfluence product helps with this, because I've seen a little bit of it and it's pretty impressive. But
thank you.
You know, I think as my mind kind of, again, maybe on the beginner side of influencer marketing, you know, I'd have to imagine there's metrics that are very easy to measure. Vanity metrics, perhaps, but they're the views, the impressions, the likes, the retweet, you know, whatever that may be that are going to hit you in the face. But then, you know, all things in business have to be measured by dollars returned, right, on that investment. But I imagine there has to be some, like you mentioned in the previous answer, trade-off between, okay, this is an awareness play, and we're okay measuring views and impressions versus we need conversion out of this. Like, what are some of the traditional metrics that people should be thinking about as they're activating influencer marketing campaigns? And maybe, are you in agreement with those, or do you think there's like better ways? How does Upfluence help people running these programs measure that?
So another great question, which makes me think that you're selling yourself short. You know a lot about the space. Let me start by saying that the consensus has changed through the years as the space has gained maturity, right? We've been 12 years into this, and you know, 10 to 12 years ago, it was all about the top of the funnel. So, you know, the vanity metrics that you were referring to. It was all about awareness and pretty pictures on Instagram, essentially, right? And as the space has gained maturity, expectations started to go down the marketing funnel. So first, middle of the funnel with some composite metrics, some proxy metrics, what's my engagement rate, or, which is a metric that I personally hate, what's my earned media value? We can debate that. I think I'm not in love with that metric. We do display it in Upfluence, but it's not something I love. But now we're really in that bottom of a funnel play, which is how many actual dollars did that bring in? What's my GMV? What's my return on investment, right? And what's my average order value and so on? And the way we track this, it's pretty straightforward. It's two ways. Number one, track links. You know, we use our own fingerprinting technology to really track the entire funnel, but also coupon codes, which is a big one as well. And that gives you the most probably pessimistic view of ROI you possibly can, because obviously there's going to be tons of conversion of folks who have seen your post, who went on to buy without using the coupon code for whatever reason, and that are not being tracked, right? So whatever ROI you look for influencer marketing, it tends to be higher than this, but you know, at the very strictest sense of it, we like to track these two methods of attributions.
Yeah, I think about my own buying journey, right? Like I'll see you know, as a consumer, I'm not even like, oh, this is an influencer campaign. I'm just like, I see somebody talking about it. I don't act then, but it's in the back of my mind somewhere. Then when I do move into the purchasing decision, it's like, oh yeah, you know, you have that recall, and then you go directly to the site and you buy from there. You know, difficult to measure. There are ways to do that, I suppose. But yeah, I think that's interesting that you kind of, that coupon code is the conservative. It's the floor for everything else that could be happening on top of that. I think that's really interesting. I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. I'd love to hear about your entrepreneurial journey. You say you've been at this 10, 12 years. That feels like the very early onset of influencer marketing. Tell us a little bit about how you found yourself kind of going down this path, being one of the first people with a doctorate in influencer marketing. Would love to just hear about your entrepreneurial journey.
No, for sure. So my actual Upfluence journey starts with a previous venture with same co-founder as Upfluence, Kevin, who's my co-CEO on the project. We started e-commerce companies together prior, straight out of college, basically in parallel to our other gigs that we had going on. And the shameful story is that we decided to launch a necktie company, which is a terrible, terrible idea. I don't need to tell you. Nobody wears neck tags anymore. I didn't wear one on my own wedding, so that tells you how much I love the product. But, you know, we thought, huh, what's a product that's, you know, easy to ship, but doesn't require a lot of textile expertise. And, you know, we can just quickly design and sell, right? And turns out we're not the first ones to have the idea. Very fragmented market, almost impossible to sell anything using the traditional channels, you know, AdWords or anything like that profitably. So we're in a bit of a pickle. I had the box of 1,000 silk ties made in Italy sitting in my living room. And so, yeah, terrible, terrible setup. And so we tried everything under the sun. And the only thing that did work was to go on Google, to find blogs, to somehow find their contact info, reach out to them, propose some sort of a collaboration, beg them basically to write a review, send them money or send them a product and so on and so forth. So, you know, I went through the entire thing, but it's the only thing that did work because those reviews were turning into traffic, traffic turned into conversion, and some of these conversions were even repeat purchases, right? So that's when we thought, huh, that mechanics is actually super powerful. It was not yet called influencer marketing at the time, but, you know, mm-hmm. that blogger outreach sort of worked. And most consumer-oriented businesses could very much benefit from this, but it's an awful process and it's incredibly time-consuming and it's very opaque. You know, to your earlier question, at the time on blogs, you didn't even have follower accounts or anything like that. So you were looking at Alexa rank and, you know, domain authority and things like that. And it was very much a shot in the dark. So that's where we had the Eureka moment, thinking, wouldn't it be nice to have a technology that would actually scale this and bring, you know, some metrics into this and make it actually a scalable acquisition channel. So that's what we set out to do. We started to put together a team in 2012, incorporated in 2013. And then I think we did all the usual mistakes. We spent a year on the product without speaking to a single prospect. And then we launched a product and that didn't work. And so we had to pivot a bunch of times. That's the traditional inexperienced entrepreneurial journey, I guess.
I love that. I mentioned this earlier, but two career stops ago, I co-founded a brewery kind of accidentally with some friends.
So jealous.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of pros to it, some challenges in that space as well. But I remember I was leading marketing amongst other things, but I remember packing boxes of beer, which even shipping beer in the States is kind of a gray area on when you can't, where you can, where you can't. But like, same thing. It was like, we knew it was working, but it wasn't like scalable, right? It was like literally like packing boxes, you know, building a list, shipping to people. I would have loved to have a tool like Upfluence to kind of track that and like be a little bit more proactive with it, because again, we knew it was working, but it was impossible to really like articulate why or how much or the return on that. So really fascinated by that all.
Awesome.
Maybe one last question on the co-CEO. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what that role is like and kind of how you guys divide and conquer and decide who owns what in the business.
Yeah. So probably as a prelude, the co-founders, we have a great working relationship. I cannot believe how lucky I am to have such a great co-founding team. And I think it's definitely a bit of a miracle. But we had possibly every job in the business. You know, we fired ourselves from different roles time and time and time again. And we started with a sort of a hybrid services tech, you know, SaaS module. And so we sort of had both our areas of expertise. And depending on what was driving more revenue and, you know, where we were allocating resources, Kevin and I wore many hats and we sort of changed. So first he was CEO, then I was CEO for a while, while he was really focused on opening the US market for us and so on. And to the point where we're like, we have very complementary personalities. We have different skill sets. We are in different geographies. Wouldn't that make sense to have that co-CEO title? And so we split in the sense that he still very much is involved in all things product, all things customer success, and also some, you know, finance back office. I'm more on the go-to-market side of things. And of course, we have like 50-ish employees here in France. So there's a lot of day-to-day operations that come with that. We have about the same number of people in the US and Mexico. So that was a nice actual split of allocation of skills. And I don't think it comes with a lot of red tape. We do have, you know, a number of syncs. We're using the time difference to our advantage. So when I'm having lunch, he's usually jogging in the morning at 7 a.m. his time. We sort of sync on different things and we communicate. And honestly, I think it's been working well and I can't imagine doing any other way now.
That's so cool. Kudos to you all for making that work and just like kind of not only making it work, but like you said, using it to your advantage. Very creative and very cool to see Upfluence continue to grow.
Thank you.
I appreciate you kind of jumping into the entrepreneurial side there. I always love those conversations and appreciate kind of the authenticity there.
Of course.
I can't let you off the hook though. We do always ask all of our guests, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to marketing?
So I'm going to tell you a true story that has been meaningful to our business. So hopefully it can raise some questions for you. But my unpopular opinion would be, do not do paid branded campaigns on AdWords or, you know, other search engine, because we used to do a bunch of those. So the way we've always managed our ad dollars were driving by ROAS or ROI, right? What does bring the most money? But the assumption when you do a branded campaign is like, oh, if I don't bid on my own keywords, my competitors are going to bid on my keywords. They're going to steal that traffic from me. And so, you know, it's a net loss for us and I'm leaving money on the table, basically. And so we've run our marketing budgets like that for years, up until the point where like, well, is that assumption actually true? You know, how much, if we were to stop bidding on some branded campaigns, how much money are we actually leaving on the table? Let's measure that. And it turns out that even on keywords that are heavily bidded on by competitors, we didn't find that we were losing a ton of traffic because we were capturing that traffic organically, right? And so all of a sudden, we 2x'd all of our basically output, marketing output, because we lowered the budget and we still had about the same amount of leads, right? So I would say my unpopular opinion here is like, don't do branded keywords and always question the first principle, the rationale behind some of your marketing decisions that sometimes you've taken for granted for years, but were actually, you know, not that smart to begin with.
That's the cool part of that answer to me is like, you stopped, like you didn't just keep doing it because that's the way you've always done it. You stopped to actually test it and measure it. And I think sometimes like experimentation gets thrown around in the marketing space of like, oh, this is just an experiment. And I think like we as marketers, myself included, don't always do a good job of like finalizing that experiment. It's just kind of an excuse to keep doing random things. But like you actually tested it, you saw the results, you doubled the marketing output and you acted accordingly. And then I think there's also this undercurrent of like AI is disrupting a lot of what you just mentioned from a 100%. Ad perspective. I shared our experience a little bit earlier. It does, you know, I think some businesses reach size where it's just like, oh, we should be doing this because everyone else is doing it. Our competitors are doing it. They're not actually testing it. So I love that perspective. Very tactical example there. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Vivian, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Upfluence, what's the best way to do that?
So we publish content all the time. So upfluence.com, our website, our socials, feel free to join. Myself, you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Vivian Garnes, G-A-R-N-E-S. And I think this is my email address for everyone to use here. So feel free to drop me a note.
Great. We will get all those links in the show notes here. Vivian, thank you so much for sharing about influencer marketing, a little bit about your entrepreneurship journey, and of course, an unpopular opinion. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining another episode. Until next time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time, same place. Cheers.